Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to multifamily industry operations. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with two special guests who are extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. Today, we're discussing something that is extremely important and timely to our multifamily industry. And today, our topic is student housing and COVID-19, myths and realities. I have joining me by phone two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Fred Pierce, president and CEO of Pierce Education Properties, and Chris Ann K.C. Kaiser, National Director of Leasing and Marketing with Pierce Education Properties. Welcome, everyone.
Good morning.
Morning.
So, student housing, you know, when I think of student housing and I think of COVID-19, I think it's a total disaster. It's got to be a total disaster. But Fred, you know, your company and you authored a white paper that says something completely different, and I had no idea. I want to talk about that today, these myths and realities surrounding how student housing has made it through thus far with COVID-19. So talk a little bit about how COVID-19 dramatically impacted educational properties in 2020 and now into 2021.
Yeah, to tell the tale, you know, Paul, and you know, the headlines often are what people see first, right? So the headlines that you saw with COVID-19 started with higher education as an institution itself. And you know, back in March of 2020, when it was declared a pandemic, you know, the first thing that happened was, you know, universities immediately converted to become 100% online in their course delivery. And then almost immediately thereafter, they shut down. They shut down their residence halls and sent the students home. They shut down all their food service, and that was not available. And it was dramatic, you know, and traumatic for those, you know, for those students. And it had a big financial impact for the universities, because in those instances, the universities, they gave rebates. You know, they refunded your room and board if you're not there, and you're not there because they sent you home. Mm-hmm. So that's where it started, and that's where the tale begins. And Casey, I don't know if you've got any other thoughts, you know, to what happened last in March and April, you know, before we segue and continue to tell the tale as that converts to student housing. But for universities, it was really traumatic really quickly.
And it was absolutely, our residents, our staff members were not getting clear information from a lot of universities. No one quite knew what was going to happen next. So, you know, it happened around spring break. Students left, and all of a sudden we're told, don't come back, we're going to wait 2 weeks. And then, don't come back, we're going to wait two more weeks. So it was evolving so quickly. Things were shut down. There were students that were stuck in the country, that were international students, not sure what to do, who now had no place to live. There were students who, you know, had planned on finishing up classes in person, who now, you know, had to figure out how they were going to do these labs and these classes. So it was just a very tenuous time for the students, for the professors, and for the universities, and it left a lot of people wondering, what's the next step for me? What am I going to do?
And Fred, you know, what was your anxiety level like? You know, we're as the CEO and president of a company that specializes in student housing across the country, you know, you don't know if there's going to be classes, when classes are going to start. The universities are trying to organize online classes. You know, so much uncertainty. I mean, it's similar to what everybody was going through during the pandemic. But student housing, when you have a property and an asset that's dedicated to one specific type of clientele or resident, and then you're getting no guidance from them, it's got to be make you somewhat anxious.
Well, it most certainly was. However, you know, we rely on, of course, the university come up with their plans for course delivery and making sure that the students, you know, continue to, you know, matriculate towards their education. What we as essential service providers, as housing providers, what, you know, were concerned about was the safety of our residents, and, you know, and making sure that we could communicate, you know, to our residents what was happening with their housing, which was we were staying open. We're an essential service provider. I can't close my complex and just tell people to go away. They've got a lease that gives them a right to live, you know, on our properties. As Casey mentioned, we have international students. So for us, you know, what we were trying to do was, frankly, we were learning on the fly, right? Yeah. I mean, we're listening to the CDC. We're trying to find out what is the guidance, you know, for people to be safe. And we're trying to monitor, you know, our residents. And you know, that's where it was really remarkable, because if you think about some of the percentages that are out there, you know, we had over the entire duration of the pandemic, you know, with a base of about 18,000 residents all across the country, we had less than 30 declared, you know, positive cases of COVID-19. Wow. Less than 30. And only one, to our knowledge, ended up going to the hospital, and she ended up going there because of pneumonia. And all the rest, they quarantined in place. You know, our product is very safe because on a comparative basis, because each resident, generally speaking, gets their own bedroom and their own bathroom. So, yes, they've got a common area living room and a common kitchen, but they can quarantine into their bedroom and stay safe. And that's exactly what they did. But nevertheless, Casey will remember this, we had a dedicated conference call with our senior executives that was lasting between 1 and 2 hours, literally every day. And it seems like it went on for months as we were trying to educate ourselves on social distancing, on quarantine, on wearing of masks and other, you know, other personal protective equipment or PPE, as we learned the acronym to be. And, you know, and how do we change operations and protocol on site to stay safe? It was an all-encompassing time, that is for sure.
And to kind of add to what Fred said, one thing that was really interesting to us is as the universities closed down their dorms, there was an influx of students looking for housing. There were students who were from out of state, were from out of the country, who now were kind of stuck. So they came to us, and we were working within the confines of, you know, what we were learning about COVID to try and move people in at a time when everyone was unsure about having someone new move into their apartment. So, you know, during those meetings Fred was talking about that we had weekly, we were looking at the best policies for moving people in, the best policies for dealing with suspected cases, how to handle our maintenance team, how to handle our on-site team. And one thing I'm really proud that our team did is we never completely had to close our offices. We found ways to safely continue to offer service every day to our residents, which was really something that I think sets us apart from a lot of people and kept us going in a very positive direction. Is we were there to support residents who maybe couldn't go home, who didn't know what was happening next. We were educating them with updates on our websites, with updates in our newsletters to our residents. So we were trying to help them learn about the pandemic just as we were learning about it. So it was a very unique situation that changed a lot of our policies and procedures going forward.
We've got about 2 minutes left in this segment. Fred, let me ask you this, because I'm sure that in the student housing game, one of the things that you closely monitor is enrollment in the universities where you have projects located. How was that affected by the pandemic?
Yeah, it's a good question and an interesting one. And, you know, so when you talk about student housing, you know, many people may think that there's student housing at every kind of college and university that you could imagine. And the truth is what we all know is student housing, that's not the case. It's basically located at public four-year institutions. And at public four-year institutions, enrollment this fall was level. It was essentially the same level of enrollment as the prior year before the pandemic. Now, on the other hand, community colleges, they were down 10%. And so there was definitely differential in terms of, you know, the profile of students that go to four-year publics, that go to four-year nonprofit privates, that go to four-year private publics and community colleges. I meant for-profit private universities as the other class. So it was strong. However, there was also some differentiations, as you might imagine. The freshman class in four-year publics was down 10%, whereas graduate students were up 3.5%, and international students, whether you looked at undergrad or graduate, were down between 12 and 15%. But the way that all shook out, you know, was it ended up being level, with some of the freshmen saying, I just don't have the resources this year. I'm a little bit afraid. I want to stay closer to home. And the international students with travel restrictions couldn't get here. They couldn't get visas. They couldn't travel. But in the end, the university enrollments were level for four-year publics, which I think was surprising to many people.
Yeah, that is. And we're gonna talk about that a little bit more in the next segment. But we're going to break it here and be back right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
REV, the multifamily leasing company, is the industry's long-term affordable leasing management solution. After all, it's really not about cost. It's really all about revenues. Book REV's expert directors and leasing career professionals for your properties today. Let REV drive revenues and create significant incremental value for you. Reduce stress, stabilize and maximize leasing performance. Never expend resources to recruit or train for leasing again. Lease up, value add, conventional leasing. Let REV be your long-term leasing solution. Go to revlmc.com to find out more. That's revlmc.com. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire REV today.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Well, we're back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing something that's especially important and timely to the student housing aspect of multifamily, and that is student housing and COVID-19 myths and realities. And I'm Paul Marks. Joining me on the phone are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Fred Pierce, president and the CEO of Pierce Education Properties, and Chris Ann Casey Kaiser, National Director of Leasing and Marketing with Pierce Education Properties. Before we jump back into the conversation, I do want to remind our listeners, if you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. Fred, it's very interesting. I'm sure we have a lot of listeners who are in multifamily who either touch on student housing or really don't get involved much in student housing. And it's kind of an eye opener, because it really is a different animal from conventional or affordable. And obviously the way it was affected by the pandemic was. You know, different as well from other market segments. So how was student housing impacted when the pandemic broke out in spring of last year?
Yeah, so amongst all residential sectors, student housing was the best performer nationally during the pandemic, and many might be surprised by that as well, given again what the impact on universities were, and follow kind of this path, if you will. So we did a survey in April of 2020 just to see where our residents were living, and you know, because their counterparts on campus had been sent home. And our survey was pretty enlightening. It said in April that 61% still were living with us, but reciprocally, 39% had gone home. Then fast forward the next month in May, we did the survey again. And in May, only 30% were still home, and 70% were living with us. So 9% more of our residents who went home, as Casey had mentioned, stayed home after spring break, were already getting tired of being at home and came back to college. Now you look at that and you might say, well, what does that mean for your collections? And during that same period, our collections were in excess of 98%. And what it showed was that the backstop of parental guarantees, you know, meant we're still collecting our rent, whether students are at home or whether they're living with us. And the other pattern I would say there was it also demonstrated that the kids want to be at school, and education is way more than the method of course delivery. You know, even if all your courses are being delivered online, the students still want to be with each other, and they want to grow up, and they want to live in their apartment, and they don't want to be at home. And as the president of University of Florida told a story about one of his students and was saying, you know, you're back at school now, your courses are all online, why are you back at school? And the student says, I'm tired of my mother telling me every day to go make my bed, so I decided to come back to school. Well, there you have it. So there's some interesting, you know, patterns that started developing very early on of the kids wanting to be at school and them continuing to pay their rent. Wasn't that the case, Casey?
Yeah, I was going to say, even on the other side, I remember last August being in East Lansing, Michigan, where Michigan State, 2 weeks before classes started, announced the closing of the dorms. So a little bit of a crunch time. And there was a mom sitting in the office who looked me in the eye and goes, I am finding him a place to live. He is not coming home with me. I cannot do another 6 months of this. So it was just a getting out, getting the experience. All of us felt that. When we went off to school, we were excited. We loved it. We didn't want to have to come back. So it was super, you know, it was super challenging for these students who were used to having freedom to go home to mom and dad and be told what to do and when to do it. And they missed their friends. They missed their friends. They missed the socializing, even if it was social distance socializing.
Fred, you mentioned, kind of touched on it a little bit about how the universities decided they were going to deliver their courses through, you know, when this all started and how that changed. You know, almost on a daily basis, it seems like in some cases. Tell us a little bit about how that affected decisions that you guys made. And one question I have ultimately is, if there's online courses, was there any need at all to try and upgrade or create greater Wi-Fi for these properties, for the students could all be on the internet taking their courses at the same time?
Well, so I'll maybe answer that in a backwards fashion, so that, you know, and Casey's more technical about this topic than I am, so be interested in her perspective on it as well. But, you know, if you compare higher education to K-12, higher education already had distance learning platforms, mm-hmm. almost to a university. Everybody was offering online courses in some way prior to the pandemic. So they had infrastructure. It doesn't mean every faculty member was competent in how to use it, but what it did mean is they had the infrastructure, whereas K-12 didn't. And candidly, online delivery of courses for K-12 in America was an unmitigated disaster in the spring of 2020, whereas I would say in higher education, you know, it largely was a success. I'm not going to say there weren't some capacity issues and there weren't some glitches as the volume going online went to 100%, but by and large, higher education did really, really well and pivoting to it in such a short period of time. So I'll leave it with that, with one segment that will come back, and I'd like to touch on the subject of, does course delivery method matter, you know, to student housing? Let's leave that out there.
Sure.
One that'll come back. But Casey, I don't know if you've got any other thoughts on the infrastructure capacity of higher education online learning.
So it definitely was a little bit of a challenge at first with the internet usage of our residents. They already were using a ton. We have a lot of streaming going on. We have a lot of gaming going on. With classes, there were some challenges. Fortunately, something that we've always kept in the forefront as a company is our Wi-Fi capabilities at the property. So we already had, I think, 2 or 3 internet upgrades in process at the time this started that just ended up being so timely for us. But there were some challenges in the beginning. The great thing about higher education versus K-12 is they could go on and do their classes at any time. A lot of the lectures were pre-recorded, so their ability to kind of spread out and decide when to do those things definitely benefited us. But we've been fortunate that we already had some planned internet upgrades going into this year that probably saved us a little bit. I definitely heard from some competitors some challenges with Wi-Fi capacity and people getting on their classes.
Yeah. So Casey, that's right. It was a two-way exchange, right? It's one for the university to have the infrastructure to disseminate the content, and the reciprocal side is, you know, the residents and their properties and their ability to receive it and be able to manage the bandwidth. So really good point.
Yeah. I was going to say, and even coming from a not necessarily student housing, but I'm involved in Greek life. I'm a sorority alumna. There were some challenges in our sorority houses that I helped with that they didn't have the internet capabilities. So there definitely were some challenges, but I think we were a better option than some of them had at home. So
yeah,
we might have actually come out on top.
Well, we've got about 2.5 minutes left in this segment, and I wanted to ask you, Fred, you know, we talked about the university's decisions on how they're going to deliver the courses. What about the students' decisions regarding living off campus? How was that affected in fall and spring of this year?
Yeah, so, you know, I gave you some of the data last spring how, you know, a number of the students, you know, did go home. And then what transpired was pre-leasing. And pre-leasing really slowed down. So after the pandemic was declared in March and going all the way through May, that's usually one of the most robust periods for pre-leasing for that next academic year. And that slowed down to where the industry fell about 10% behind, you know, in April of 2020 and May of 2020. But then the messaging started coming out. And the messaging initially was strong. And with that strong messaging from American universities, pre-leasing again picked up in the summer in a very robust way, to where June and July were some of the strongest pre-leasing months in summer history in student housing. And then there was a pivoting again with positive cases in July, and universities that had communicated an intent to have their courses be substantially or entirely in person in the fall, they pivoted, and by the time August came around, they were either hybrid, both in person and online, or they were largely online. And as a result, there was about a 3% decline in occupancy in student housing, where some students that got their syllabus and found out their courses were all going to be online, some stayed home. What was interesting was, however, they came back very quickly, and by the time January came around, there was 1% more students living back in student housing than there was in the fall, and that almost never happens. So the phenomenon of students wanting to come to school, you know, proved true. They want to be there with their classmates.
And Casey, we got about 30 seconds left, so sum up, if you can, from a leasing and marketing standpoint, what went on in the early days of the pandemic?
Student housing is unique. I've always heard it compared to a cruise ship. Everyone gets on in August and they don't get off until July. And once you set sail, your leasing doesn't change. This year and last year, it has been the exact opposite. We've been making pit stops along the way at every port to pick up people who decided home wasn't where they wanted to be, or when the school decided to bring several more students back. So it's been very, like Fred said, very back and forth, very up and down as messaging from the universities came out as they opened and closed dorms and took more classes in person or hybrid. So it's been probably one of the most hectic and unusual years in student housing I've ever experienced.
All right. Well, we are going to break it here for this segment. We're going to be back after the short break with our next segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
REV, the multifamily leasing company, is the industry's long-term affordable leasing management solution. After all, it's really not about cost. It's really all about revenues. Book REV's expert directors and leasing career professionals for your properties today. Let REV drive revenues and create significant incremental value for you. Reduce stress, stabilize and maximize leasing performance. Never expend resources to recruit or train for leasing again. Lease up, value add, conventional leasing. Let REV be your long-term leasing solution. Go to revlmc.com to find out more. That's revlmc.com. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire REV today.
Well, we are back and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing, our topic today is student housing and COVID-19, myths and realities. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Fred Pierce, President and CEO of Pierce Education Properties, and Chris Ann K.C. Kaiser, National Director of Leasing and Marketing with Pierce Education Properties. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. REV, the leasing management company. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire REV today. Allegion, the leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties, and CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. So, Fred and KC, this whole conversation that we're having today is really kind of the result of a very comprehensive and kind of eye-opening white paper that, Fred, that you wrote, which is entitled COVID-19 and Student Housing, Myths and Realities. If you'd like to download a copy of that, you're welcome to go to our website at multifamilyradio.com for this episode. There'll be a link to download it there, but it is very educational. And even people who are in multifamily but not in student housing, I think, would get something out of it because it really sheds a light on that particular segment of the multifamily industry. Fred, let's talk a little bit about how the academic year unfolded for universities and student housing operators. You have your own portfolio, but student housing operators as a whole.
Yeah, and we actually had an organized biweekly call amongst the largest operators in the industry so we could share experiences and best practices. It was the most collaborative time in industry history, and I think it just goes to show that when the going gets tough, that we can all band together for the greater good, and that was really, really helpful. So, looking into what unfolded was sort of interesting. First of all, campuses in academic year 2020-21, the first thing they did was de-densify. So picture the old dorm room that was double occupied or triple occupied, and now those are single occupied. And so the average university only accommodated somewhere between 50% and 80% of the number of students on campus in the fall that they did the prior year. They de-densified. And again, as I mentioned in the prior segment, the majority of universities operated either substantially online or in a hybrid model. But guess what? The course delivery method didn't matter in terms of the performance of student housing. Rather, what mattered was university messaging. If the messaging was clear, then it made for a more smooth sailing for student housing. If the messaging was unclear, for example, in Florida where they were unclear, you know, we had a property that started at only 89% occupied, but guess what? By the end of the fall semester, it was back at 99% because the students came back. But the bottom line was those were the anomalies where the messaging was super unclear, and the majority of the universities did a decent job, even though they might have pivoted, did a decent job. So the student housing performed well, and let me give you two metrics. One is our show-up rate. So we start our leasing usually in September or October for the next year. And, you know, we were probably 50 to 60% as an industry pre-leased when it was declared a pandemic in March. So you might have thought that if you got 50 or 60% of your students last year that had signed a lease before it was a pandemic, some of those might not show up. They might not come back to school that next year. And in fact, we had one of the highest show-up rates, the percentage of our pre-leases that moved in was 99.5%. And so that was an interesting factor, and it proved the resiliency, you know, of student housing, that so many of the kids who signed leases came back to school no matter how their courses were being delivered. And similarly, in the fall, our collection rate was 99%. So they moved in and they paid their rent and they were back at college. That was an interesting phenomenon given full transparency of the pandemic and not very many courses being delivered in person. You know, that was the outlook and outcome for 2020-2021, which was really good for student housing.
And go ahead. I'm sorry, Casey.
I was going to say, and going off of what Fred said with the messaging, like I mentioned earlier, we took over a 3-property portfolio in East Lansing last fall. With the university's messaging there, they were a little unclear. They were still planning up until the last minute to be in person and on campus. With their announcement, those 3 properties, which total, you know, over 2,000 beds, saw a 20% increase in 30 days in their pre-lease percentage because there was a flood of students into the market. So in some cases, the unclear messaging just led to delayed results instead of no results. But it didn't vary from properties that had universities that had in-person classes and didn't. Georgia Southern was a university that had in-person classes starting this past fall, never stopped. And their leasing, their show-up rate, all of that was the same as a university like Michigan State, where they did not have any in-person classes over the last year.
Wow. And I want to ask this question. I know enough about student housing to be dangerous, I guess, Fred. But you know, I've got some friends that work in that segment of the industry, and it has always boggled my mind. You know, prior to the pandemic, how that particular industry, how you guys operate, where you do all your turns at one time, and you have like a 3-week window to get everything done that you would normally do to make ready all of your units. This isn't part of your white paper, but it's just a question I have. How was that affected when from all the different measures that you might have had to put in place because of the pandemic?
Yeah, you know, Casey, you're so hands-on. Why don't you take the lead on that one and say, you know, were things different or similarly the same, you know, in the turn this year?
Yeah, we definitely were fortunate with our weekly and daily meetings, both the industry meetings weekly and the daily meetings of our company, to come up with some great plans. So there were changes in entering apartments, verifying with residents that were staying in Renewed if they had COVID or had been exposed, mask wearing, cleaning procedures, those types of things changed. But it was still the same. Our staff still had to get in, still had to make ready units. We might have had to work around students if there were any fears that they may have been exposed or anything. But in general, that part stayed the same. The biggest change for us was our actual move-in days. We went to drive-through move-ins, which ended up being something we'll continue past the pandemic. It was such a benefit to have everything ready, have them stay in their car, show ID, hand over their keys, and they moved in. It was the smoothest move-in I've been a part of in probably, you know, the last 14, 15 years. So there's been some long-term benefits to this and learning how to do things in a different way that we're going to be able to continue. But in general, the process stayed the same. We worked with vendors. We worked, you know, they put in extra cleaning procedures. I'm sure you know, just as there was in conventional multifamily, there were some increased costs for some of those procedures and things. But we were able to work around it and keep things pretty status quo for the day-to-day.
Fred, you had mentioned something, you know, Casey just mentioned that you're going to keep those move-in, the drive-in and move-ins in place because they work so smoothly. One of the things you'd mentioned was that you work together as an industry as far as other student housing operators. Is that going to continue when the pandemic's in the rearview mirror?
You know, I think that the collaboration will continue, but I must say I suspect it won't be to the same magnitude. It may not be every other week there's a, you know, a collaborated agenda of things we need to speak about. You know, we already in our sector have three major conferences, mm-hmm. you know, every year. So National Multi-Housing Council and MHC, you know, holds a conference usually in October. NAA, the National Apartment Association, has themselves, you know, a conference, and Interface Student Housing, which is the publisher of Student Housing Business Magazine. So we have a tremendous amount. Every 4 months, we've got an opportunity where, you know, 1,000 or more people are getting together and exchanging best practices and information, and that will continue to be, you know, a primary source. But I do think that there's been enough gained from these bi-weekly sessions that, you know, I do expect that they're going to continue in some way, shape, or fashion, you know, to some extent, you know, going forward into the foreseeable future.
All right. Well, we're going to break it here. We have a little bit more time left, but we'll just pick it up in the next segment because I want to ask some questions that are going to take a little bit longer to answer, I think. So we're going to be back after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters. We're going to be back with our final segment of this episode right after this break. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
REV, the multifamily leasing company, is the industry's long-term affordable leasing management solution. After all, it's really not about cost. It's really all about revenues. Book REV's expert directors and leasing career professionals for your properties today. Let REV drive revenues and create significant incremental value for you. Reduce stress, stabilize and maximize leasing performance. Never expend resources to recruit or train for leasing again. Lease up, value add, conventional leasing. Let REV be your long-term leasing solution. Go to revlmc.com to find out more. That's revlmc.com. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire REV today.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Well, we are back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing something that's very important to the multifamily industry, and that is student housing and COVID-19, myths and realities. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Fred Pierce, President and CEO of Pierce Education Properties, and Chris Ann Casey-Kaiser, National Director of Leasing and Marketing with Pierce Education Properties. Fred, one of the things that obviously is in the news quite a bit, just in general, is vaccinations and what people are doing with vaccination. How has that affected the student housing industry? What are the universities doing in regards to requirements?
Yeah, so universities from the onset have really been on the cutting edge of where things were. Originally, it was testing and contact tracing. And, you know, just by way of example, where we're headquartered out here in San Diego, they gave the countywide contract for testing to University of California, San Diego, and they gave the countywide contract for contact tracing to San Diego State University. So from the get-go, and even at San Diego State, you know, the students could get tested in the Student Health Service Center, and they opened up a community testing, you know, facility in the Alumni Center on campus so that those in the surrounding neighborhood had access to a convenient place to get tested. So universities have been, you know, on that cutting edge from the beginning. And now the trend, since vaccines are, you know, generally readily available, you know, is the majority of universities have come out and said now that in order to return to campus, to move into the residence halls and to take courses in person, they're now requiring students to be vaccinated. And if not, they can return to taking courses online, because there is now a mechanism for hybrid delivery, right? You can have somebody who's quarantining, you know, taking and participating in their class online, while the majority of the class can be in person, because they've got technology that was purchased that can make courses available, you know, online while they're still in person. But the vaccine is now going to be the standard, you know, in higher education. If you're coming back, you're going to be vaccinated. And I think that's good. I think that's the safest way, you know, for that to occur. And that is the industry standard, you know, by far.
And let me ask you, what is campus life going to be like this fall, 2021, not only for students, but with athletics? That was something that was had a big change in it from COVID.
Well, for sure. I'll offer some perspective. And, Casey, I know you've got some perspective on this, you know, as well. Thank goodness it looks like, you know, athletics are all going to be in person. And they're going to be largely at full capacity. And, you know, I was just making my own plans for where San Diego State's Aztecs are going to be playing this fall, because we've got a new stadium. So we're actually playing our games up in the L.A. area, and I got to be traveling up there for those. But they're going to be in person, same with basketball. And that's really great. College sports is such a part of the college atmosphere, and to have them back competing, you know, as you saw both in K-12 and in colleges, where they all started playing again, you know, in the spring. So that's what we're expecting. You know, I do think there's going to be some mask protocols, you know, predominantly across university campuses, and that's seeming to be ebbing and flowing in different states and different areas. But I think there's probably going to be maybe some more masks that are still going to be being worn on campus for extra precautions. But I think this fall will be a lot closer to the way it used to be in person than, boy, that aberration of a year we had last year. You have any other perspectives on that, Casey?
Yeah, so we're fortunate to have some amazing sports marketing partnerships with several of the universities we're at. And about a month and a half ago, you know, they started coming to us with the plans for fall, with everything being in person, with everything going back to full. I know Michigan State is having their first on-campus in the stadium event next week, as a precursor to the season opening back up. They plan on having a full season. There's, you know, a lot of things that are going in place, and Michigan was one of the last states to really drop a lot of its occupancy guidelines for both outdoor and indoor events. So the fact that they're on pace and have the plans to be at full capacity, I think, sets a really good precedent for us. And student life in general, we're seeing sorority and fraternity recruitments for the fall are going to be in person at a lot of universities, which last year they were attempted and mostly successful in doing completely virtual recruitments, which was a unique situation. And we're seeing marching bands already practicing. We're seeing cheerleading getting back together. We're seeing, you know, a lot of the sports teams, a lot of the groups on campus coming back together for meetings already. And it's going to be exciting to get back to, you know, the new normal, as they always say.
Well, Fred, we've got about 3 minutes left before I want to transition into something else. But I want to ask you kind of a two-part question, and that is, what are your predictions for what's going to be happening with student housing as a result of where we are currently with the pandemic? And then also, what type of long-lasting effects do you believe there's going to be, whether they're changes for the good or just things that are going to linger for a while?
Yeah, so first of all, the prognostication, and boy, do things look really, really good for the next academic year. And you know, as of just yesterday, the industry is 3.5% ahead in pre-leasing of where it was last year. And our portfolio is more than 10% of where it was last year. And we're expecting our portfolio to be in the high 90s occupied and with a strong move-in and strong collections. So we're expecting this to be a great year. Same with university enrollments. This is going to be the biggest freshman class in more than a decade. And the reasons are simple, is A, 10% of the would-be freshmen last year didn't enroll last year, and they're coming this year. They are tired of being at home. They're coming this year. And then you've got the high school graduating class who spent their entire senior year in high school virtually learning from their house. So if ever they've wanted to go away to college like never before, that's going to be this fall. So the combination of those two, and we're already seeing it, you know, in applications. You're also going to see some part or some semblance of a return of international students who, for travel restrictions, visa, you know, restrictions, and even political reasons, have stayed away, you know, last year and for that matter in recent years. It won't be a full class of international students because, you know, when President Biden opened up visa offices, you know, internationally and expanded them, you know, it was after many universities had closed their application period. So, but some extended applications as well. So you're going to see some more international students. So the prognosis is looking, you know, really, really, really great. You know, one of the best years in a long, long, long long time is this fall. And then in terms of, you know, intermediate or longer term, you know, results of the pandemic. So I think a couple of things, you know, I think universities have learned in short order to be very nimble and to adapt to an incredibly challenging situation. I think that will bode well for America's universities and into the future. But the one thing I don't think that is going to happen is I think it's proven that online learning will not be a disruptor to traditional residential education and, you know, your typical high school senior matriculating onto a residential campus situation in college. The students don't like online learning. As much as they love social media, they don't like online learning, and the surveys have borne that out. So while they can and do and will, you know, on a limited basis continue to consume online learning, that they're there at school for way more than their course delivery, right? So it's not proven to be a disruptor. The fact that American higher education this fall pivoted, you know, to again saying we're going to be in person this fall goes to show that that's what the consumers want, that's what the students want. So you're going to have flexibility. You may have courses that offer some course content online. You can go back and listen to a lecture again because it's archived online, even though you were there in person. So there'll be some benefit from that, but it's not going to change, you know, enrollment in public four-year universities, especially those at Power Five football conferences, you know, going forward. They're still going to be very residential, no disruption from online learning, in my opinion.
We've got a couple of minutes left, and this segment, I'd like to transition, and I'll start with you, Fred. Take about a minute or so and let our listeners know how you got in the industry, and if someone wants to reach you and find out more, how can they do that?
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that, Paul. You know, I founded Pierce Education Properties 26 years ago when I spent a decade as a real estate consultant, and one of my consulting clients was San Diego State University, who hired me to be their master developer and implement the redevelopment of 131 acres of private land surrounding San Diego State. And that's when Pierce Education Properties was launched. And, you know, fast forward 26 years later, we're still doing developments. We've got two that are going to commence construction at San Diego State this fall. And we become a leading national operator and have acquired 27,000 beds, over $1 billion worth of student apartments, you know, over the last 15 years as our profile nationally has grown. And people can find out more information about us at www.pierceeducationproperties.com is the best place. And our corporate phone number is 619-297-0400.
KC, we've got about a minute left. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how they can reach you as well.
Definitely. So I didn't start 26 years ago with Pierce, but I did start 14 years ago at the acquisition of their first student housing property in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. Well, I was a student at Central Michigan University as a part-time employee, and over the last 14 years kind of continued my track up from part-time student employee to leasing professional to leasing manager to regional to now working as a part of the senior executive team at Pierce. So it's my home, as I like to say. It's my family, and I've been super grateful for the experiences and education I've received in the student housing industry. I can be reached, same phone number and same website, or email is kkizer, so that's K-K-I-Z-E-R. At pierceeducationproperties.com.
That's fantastic. And you are going to be one of the featured panelists at a session at the NAA Apartmentalize coming up at the end of August, first part of September. So I look forward to sitting in on that panel when I'm up there as well. I want to thank you guys for coming. It's love to have you back again. This is a topic, student housing, that I think is something that's so important to multifamily. But we're going to be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.